God, can you hear me? We've already heard that this is our topic for this evening, but it's such a burning question. Are you there? Can you hear me? Do you care at all? Just like the little girl in this play. She was being bullied and pushed around by everybody. If you were bullied as a child, if you ever had a teacher who told you, you'll never amount to anything, you know exactly what she was going through. It hurts, and it hurts deeply. These questions that we have, are you there? Do you care? Why is this happening to me? I have three brothers. One of my brothers started asking this question. He's had a number of episodes in his life where he's asked this question very intensely. 10 years ago, most of all, when his wife became sick with cancer and died within less than a year of the diagnosis. Are you there? Can you hear me? Do you care? I have of another brother, my sister-in-law, his wife, has been asking this question quite a bit because my brother, for a long time, was drinking way too much. She constantly had to be scared. Where is he? What's going on? What's going to happen next? When the phone rings, who's going to be on the other end? What kind of message is she going to be getting? And the third brother, he was asking this question very intensely a few years ago when his marriage was falling apart. Real life stories, real situations of real people in real pain. And I'm sure that everyone here, if not these scenarios, has experienced a lot of pain and has also asked, God, can you hear me? Are you there? Do you care? It's not an easy topic to deal with. Many times we wonder, why doesn't he answer our prayers? Why do we have the feeling that they're bouncing off of the ceiling? And people have been thinking about these questions for thousands and thousands of years. There have been people who, there have been people who have said that God isn't capable of doing something about it. There have been people like Friedrich Nietzsche who said, God is dead. I brought a selection of books from my own personal library, all of them directly addressing the question, why? Why do bad things happen? Why is life so difficult? And, you know, I've never gone out and specifically tried to collect books on this topic. That stack could be a lot taller. But one book that was written that's not in this particular pile, but I do have in my library, is the book of Job. It was written thousands, many thousands of years ago. We find this book in the Old Testament. And it's a fascinating story, actually, because in the first chapter, Job is introduced to us as a very good man. I mean, he does everything just right, and he takes steps to make sure God is pleased with him and his family just in case one of his children might have done something wrong. He is the picture of a good man. And in the book of Job, right at the beginning, we are also told that Satan, the devil, comes into God's presence, and God starts bragging on Job. He says, hey, have you seen my servant Job? He is a good guy. And Satan says, of course he does what you want him to. You've given him everything. You've made him rich. You've given him a big family. He's got it made. Of course he's going to do what you want him to do. And God said, okay, you may take his things away. You don't touch him, but you may take away the things that he has. Satan didn't wait to be told again. He went out, and we read that one person after the next comes to Job within minutes and say, all of your flocks are gone. All of your herds are gone. And I would imagine the worst news of all was the last one who came and said, your children were all together, and a storm came, knocked the tent over that they were in, and everybody was killed. How would we react to losing everything? But in the book of Job, we read, I read from chapter 1, a few verses, 20 through 22. Then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head and fell on the ground and worshipped. And he said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. Wow. Pretty amazing. I mean, how could somebody still worship God after all of this loss? And when Satan came back into God's presence, God pointed out, did you see my servant Job? You did all these awful things to him for no reason, and he is still faithful to me. Satan, come on. A guy will do anything to save his own skin. You didn't touch him. He's still perfectly healthy. Of course he's not upset. You can feel the cynicism just dripping off of his words. And so God says, okay, you can take away his health, but you may not kill him. And so Satan goes out, and Job is struck with boils, painful sores from head to foot. Misery. And one would really ask, can it get any worse? I want to read some verses from chapter 2, starting with verse 9. Then his wife, Job's wife, said to him, do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women would speak. Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that had come upon him, they came each from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. They made an appointment together to come to show him sympathy and comfort him. And when they saw him from a distance, they did not recognize him. And they raised their voices and wept, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads toward heaven. And they sat with him on the ground 7 days and nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was great. So in these verses, we find that Job's wife comes to him and says, your life is no longer worth living. Why don't you curse God and die? Not exactly comforting words. He reprimands her and asks, should we only take the good things from God and not be worshiping him if things aren't going our way? A very important question indeed. And we read of the three friends who came and who sat silently with him for 7 days. But oh, if they had only kept their mouths shut. Because if you read on in Job, over the next 36 chapters, I counted, over the next 36 chapters, you read of the conversation between Job and his friends. And his friends are telling him, you must have done something terrible to deserve this. And in fact, as bad as it's hit you, you must be an awful person. Thanks, guys. I needed that now. And his friends, they thought that they knew God. They thought that they knew exactly how these things work. They thought, if you're a good person, only good things will happen to you. But Job was sitting there saying, no, that's not the way this works. You are wrong about me, and you are wrong about God. And this debate goes back and forth. And Job, of course, the entire time is trying to defend himself, and he's calling on God to be his witness that he is innocent. And of course, repeatedly throughout this, the question that continues to echo is, why? Why did these bad things happen to me? Why do bad things happen to good people? Why doesn't God just fix this? Why? And the interesting thing is, towards the end of the book of Job, God does come and speak to Job, but he never answers the question, why? Why not? Why does God not answer that question? Well, people have been dealing with this question for thousands of years, and I'm not going to contend to have the wisdom to be able to give you the answer to this question. But I think one reason that God did not answer the question why is because there is oftentimes no answer, or at the very least, no answer that we will be satisfied with. Because even if God did come to us and say, well, this is why all these things happened, are we really going to be satisfied with that? I don't think so. But there's something to learn about this. Why, I would say, why is the wrong question. Because when we ask the question why, we're always looking backwards. We're looking back to the things that have happened that are already past, and trying to figure out what happened back there. But asking why does not show us a path forward. And I believe, sincerely, that the better question is, what now? What path forward does God want to go with us? We are in this situation. We may not like it at all, but we are here. How can we keep from being stuck, spinning our wheels, not going anywhere with our lives? How can we move forward? And I think God invites us to ask him, Lord, how can I move forward? And he wants to give us new hope. He wants to give us a new path. He wants us to grow in faith that we trust him. Asking the question why isn't going to do that. But God, what now, will help us to look forward. And to our original question, God, can you hear me? The Bible and the experiences of millions of people give a resounding yes to this question. God does hear us. He often does not answer in the way that we would like him to, but he does not leave us behind. He does not give up on us. He does not go away from us and not listen to us anymore. He is always there. He hears our cries, and yes, he cares. He cares very, very deeply. He is there, not out there. He is there. He is here for you. And he wants to give you strength. That doesn't mean that he's always going to keep us from any suffering. It means we will never be alone. God, can you hear me? Are you there? He says, yes, my child, I am here. You never need to doubt that. Amen.